I'm delighted to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Jason Silverman. He's director of the Cinematheque at the CCA. He's a filmmaker. And David Carl joins us. He's dean of graduate programs at St. John's College. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having us.
Thrilled to be here.
And we're talking about this thing that's going on at the St. John's Film Institute, which is a summer program where people study films at St. John's College the way they studied the Great Books curriculum, and this is now in its second year.
Correct.
And you at St. John's and you, Jason, at the CCA are kind of collaborating to bring the films that the students are studying to the screen for the public. These are classic films. The series is called The Auteurs, and The Auteurs are back this year for the second year. Now, first of all, tell us a little bit about the Institute and how you select these films. I guess it varies a little bit from year to year.
It does. St. John's is based originally on a Great Books curriculum. We have tried to come up with a list of some of the greatest philosophers, poets, novelists, historians, and that is the curriculum that our undergraduate and graduate curriculum are built on. When we decided 2 years ago to add a film component to our program, we started to think about the question of, is there a canon of great movies? We found we couldn't come to a consensus on that question, but we were able to come to a consensus on about 200 great directors over the last 120 years, consulting with filmmakers, directors, writers, critics, professors. We put this list of 200 great directors together, and we've made a commitment to studying 8 different directors every summer. And the guidelines are we want a range of historic periods, starting with the silent era, and a range of different nationalities.
So there's an Italian focus this year?
The second 4 weeks will focus on Italian neorealism. The first 4 weeks will focus on silent comedy, primarily Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton.
So what is so interesting to me about it is that it changes every year. So if people want to come back and study year after year, it's a whole new films curriculum every year.
It will never repeat until we run out of great movies, which means will never repeat.
It will never repeat. And the two of you are collaborating to bring these films to the screen, and I think it's so important to see them on a good screen with good sound, good copies of these films.
Yeah, and all of the films are shown in their best available format, which is either 35 or what's called DCP, which is the digital format. A lot of these films have been restored digitally and presented digitally, and for me, I haven't seen all of these films on the big screen. So last year, I went to all 8 films, and it was a revelation to me. I don't know about you, David,
two films in particular stand out for me last year. I have been a fan of Dreyer's Joan of Arc for years. It's probably in my top 3 or 4 favorite films. Seeing it at CCA last year just blew me away. And when I went into class to talk to our students, they couldn't believe it. For some of them, it was their first silent film ever, and they were speechless. The other film that blew me away last year was Murnau's Sunrise, and that largely because it was one of the first times I'd heard live accompaniment. Maybe you want to talk a little bit about that means for a film.
It was remarkable. The Sunrise screening was incredible, and I had never seen that on the big screen. And it is an incredibly beautiful film. And, you know, at this moment in cinema, in silent cinema, the cinematographers were still working things out. They were still experimenting and making discoveries, and these films have that feeling of excitement to them because the medium was young enough that it has a sense of adventure to it. And Sunrise is one of the great film cinematography, you know, I'm not going to even try this, cinematographically. It's really gorgeous to see. We had Hank Troy, who's an incredible keyboardist, pianist, who's Denver-based, come down and provide the live accompaniment. And it was, you know, I had goosebumps for 90 minutes.
And he will be here this Saturday night.
He'll be here this Saturday night to play with Charlie Chaplin's Gold Rush, which is Chaplin's own favorite Chaplin film.
That's saying a lot.
Chaplin went back and actually reworked the film a little bit after its initial release. He composed his own score for it. He reworked the titles and a few other scenes and added a little bit of sound to it. He loved it so much that he couldn't quite let it go. But we're going to show the 1925 version, and it is funny. It's got some of the funniest Chaplin scenes. It's poignant. It's got a very subtle but strong political undercurrent, which will be relevant to people today. You know, it's the 99%ers again.
Right.
So, you know, it's a really beautiful film. And I have to say that seeing Hank play is an incredible treat.
So the whole world of musicians who, and it's not a big world, of musicians who accompany silent films, he is one of the greats, according to you, in this field.
Well, I've seen a lot of these silent film performances. I think it's my favorite form of live entertainment, or one of them. I love the opera, too. But seeing these beautiful old films reinterpreted and recontextualized because of the music, it's an incredible experience. And Santa Fe's been fortunate to have a lot of that happening for a small town. I did a program with the Lensic called Live Music Silent Film, and we'd bring in groups and commission scores and show old silent films, and it was really wonderful, and people really responded to it. Hank is one of the most talented that I've seen. He's very passionate about what he plays. He knows the works inside and out. He's been doing this for 30-something years. He's really incredibly gifted.
So he knows Gold Rush, so when certain scenes happen, he's anticipating the suspense or the drama.
Exactly. He knows the films, but he doesn't write it a complete. He doesn't compose new scores for them. He just improvises, but he has certain themes that recur, and he does know the films well enough that he can tease you into the films, and he can release you into the scenes and release you out of them in a beautiful way.
And I'll add to that, one of the goals of the Film Institute up at St. John's is to help people become more thoughtful about their watching and to really see and hear more. When I saw Sunrise last year and heard Hank perform for that, it was as if I'd never seen the movie before, a film I'd seen 6 or 7 times. I was seeing things completely differently because of the impact that the sound was having on me.
So the music really underlined the film for you.
One of the things we sometimes do in class is we'll watch a scene, a short scene, a minute or two or three times, and we'll watch it with the volume on and the volume off and talk about the different experience you have. We're trying to heighten people's awareness and help them tune into all the things that contribute to the aesthetic experience of watching a film, and the music is a very, very powerful part of that.
It's so interesting to me because when you have classic films that are, nearly 100 years old, you watch them, there's different ways to watch them. You watch them as historical documents, you watch them as entertainment, but when you've got music like that, they're alive and they're new in a way that keeps them, I think, fresh and alive.
Well, we won't kid ourselves to say that, all silent cinema was great. There was a lot of horrible films made during the silent era. But the films that have survived and that have the kind of following that Gold Rush have tell their stories with a kind of elegance. And, today you can use dialogue and music to cover up the narrative and visual holes and weaknesses. So these films that tell their stories like Chaplin did, like Murnau did, like Keaton did, like Dreyer did, these films are the real works of visual art.
It's interesting to think about Gold Rush in particular. It's a 90-year-old film. It spans almost the whole history of cinema, which is, what would you say, about 120 years now. At the time that it was made, Chaplin had been making films for over 10 years already. He was the most recognized, most famous human being on the planet. I'm trying to think of who today has an equal stature. He's the equivalent of Michael Jackson 25 years ago.
Right. I wanted to ask you both what you get out of watching these films a third time, a 10th time, a 50th time, how that process, and especially as part of the Film Institute, you're watching these films over and over, how they open up to you. Because there's a similar thing that happens with books that you read and reread, whether it be a St. John's thing or not.
I'm guessing that Jason and I come from very different backgrounds and perspectives in response to that question. I came to film from reading, from a lifetime study of reading, teaching, discussing books, and I wanted to broaden my own realm of aesthetic experience. I think often of what Nabokov said about reading. There's no such thing as reading a book, only rereading a book. I think when a film is a great film, that's true of the film as well. You see more every time. But for me, it was books first, then films, and trying to learn for myself how to appreciate the ways in which films were as great as the greatest works of literature.
Yeah, you watch for craft, in essence. I mean, the first time you see a film, you're swept away by the story and the visuals, and it's something new. As you rewatch it, those things can still have the impact, the emotional impact, but you start seeing how the construction is done. You start seeing how scenes are put together, or how that composition was built. And you understand the engineering of the film. And when the film is beautifully engineered, like all of these films in the series are, you get a real appreciation for the artistry.
You, as a filmmaker, Jason, I would think, would be using that understanding of craft in your own work. Are there any films that are really the kind of big influential ones for you?
You know, every story that you tell, that a storyteller tells, is different from the story before. And so when you're thinking about form, you're thinking about how to use that form to best tell the story that you're engaging with. So I think you can learn a lot about what good storytelling is by watching a lot of movies or reading a lot of books or looking at a lot of the masterpiece paintings. And that informs your process. But there's not, you know, if you're starting to try to imitate another work, the work's going to feel imitative. So you really need to approach each story individually.
So we're talking about the Auteur series at the CCA, which is classic films starting this Saturday night, City Lights by Charlie Chaplin with Hank Troy accompanying the film. And then the following weekend, June 20th and 21st, actually the Charlie Chaplin is also Sunday as well as Saturday. The following weekend, Buster Keaton, The General. Tell us about this film.
It was voted the greatest silent film of all time by one website. It is an incredibly kinetic, exciting, funny piece. I was just watching some clips before I came over, and I can't believe some of the stuff that Buster Keaton does. It's like, he was really putting his life on the line. The story follows this engineer in the South, a train engineer who goes on this wild chase using his train, and most of the film is shot on trains.
And let me say one thing about the kinetic energy. I read an interview with Jackie Chan, who said the two greatest influences in his development as a martial artist were Bruce Lee and Buster Keaton. And when you see Buster Keaton on the screen, he's like a dancer. It's amazing what he can do with his body.
And he also put his life at risk continuously while he was making these films. He was also a huge figure by the mid-20s. He and Chaplin were two of the most famous people in the universe. And he decided to take all his resource and throw it into this film. And you won't believe some of the things you see in this film, and for, you know, a film from 1926. And so I watch it, and I'm still like, did he really just do that?
Did he just throw that stunt man?
He's on a moving train. He's on the front of it, and you can see the train moving. It's a real shot. He's holding a railroad tie. There's a railroad tie in front of him on the tracks. You know, the people in the train in front of him are trying to stop his progress. He takes one railroad tie, throws it, and knocks the other railroad tie off, and the train continues down the track. I mean, you know, I don't know if he had to shoot that 14 times before he got it right or if he got it right the first time. But the times he got it wrong, if he did, were incredibly painful.
Yeah, right.
And we'll be doing a special live musical accompaniment with that show as well, right?
Yeah, so we've created something. This is based on the work of Molly Sturgis, called the Santa Fe Pop-Up Choir. Molly does this amazing work called Conduction, where she'll get professional musicians, but also just people who love music or anyone who likes to use their voice or bang on something, in a circle, and will make basically a live improvised performance using different hand signals. So she'll direct people on what to do using hand signals. People are trained before the project starts, so we'll have two rehearsals. And we will create a live, improvised, one-of-a-kind, once-in-a-lifetime soundtrack to Buster Keaton's General.
Very, very interesting.
It's going to be fun. The whole theater will be a choir.
Oh, my goodness. That is so cool. And if you haven't rehearsed, you can still
you can still show up. Yeah, you can come watch. It's going to be an incredible experience. I've actually participated in Molly's choirs before, and they're so much fun. I love this is why we did it. I participated in one. I said, this would be perfect for a silent film.
Now, there's some other films besides the silent films, as we've talked about. There's some Italian films later on during the summer, and also Orson Welles' Touch of Evil, a classic that I was rewatching last night, and that's another one of those films that you can just see it over and over.
Yes, we'll be doing a week on Orson Welles, a week on Hitchcock, a week on Buñuel, and then the silent comedy and the Italian neorealism. So we have a pretty wide range, in keeping with the Film Institute's desire to expose students to a wide historical range and also a wide range of styles. We didn't do it last year, but this year we'll be doing Citizen Kane. We're also doing Hitchcock's Vertigo. So the two films which have been vying for the BFI's selection of greatest film of all time, I think for the last 50 years now. Citizen Kane held that position for a long time. It was usurped by Vertigo just a few years ago, and so we'll be studying both of those and watching and discussing both of those this summer as well.
It's so interesting to see Hitchcock films years later. I remember watching, being sort of obsessed with Hitchcock in college and watching virtually all his movies because there were like Hitchcock film societies, year after year in college. So I went to all, as many as I could. And now, all of these years later, when I rewatch them, some of them stand up to the test of time better than others.
Yeah, they're creatures of their moment, for sure. I mean, they're so exciting to watch because he was so inventive. He's such a visionary. He really loved using the frame in the most impactful way possible. And so it was really, it's fun to see these films again, even if they feel slightly dated or slightly mannered. They're so expressive that he really used the camera in a different way than anyone had up to that point.
And one of the goals of the Film Institute in general, and one of the reasons our collaboration with CCA is so valuable, is we're trying to expose students to the, at least at St. John's, and Mary Charlotte, because you've spent your time up there as well. We are such a community so focused on language as the medium of expression, whether it's the written word, the spoken word. Now we're trying to expand the notion of what it means to think into the idea that looking itself is a form of thinking. And I think in that regard, Hitchcock is one of the true masters of creating tableaus, his use of mise-en-scène, to actually provoke thought which doesn't stem from language, or at least not the written and spoken language we're used to, but a whole new language of visual imagery. What is mise-en-scène?
Mise-en-scène is basically the construction of a sequence. How, with the choices you make to build that sequence. So when you analyze mise-en-scène, you're talking about the choices that a director made, to the subtle choices that, people who are not practiced in watching film critically might miss, but still have an emotional impact. And film critics will analyze how you put things in the frame and scenes next to each other.
I read a quotation by an artist recently who said, "I think with my eyes," and it reminds me of what you're saying.
There's a quote from the Austrian philosopher Wittgenstein where he's exhorting a group of students, and he says, "Don't think, look." And when I read that, I thought, "Well, what is looking?" as opposed to thinking, and it made me realize that our use of the word imagination, that means to make images. Images are things we look at. So the imagination is a form of looking. And I think we are very comfortable in forms of educating the intellect. I'm trying to stretch that out and explore ways of educating the imagination as well.
Which is such an exciting take on the movies, to come at it from the St. John's angle. It's such a thrill to take the bigger perspective and to bring that level of analysis to the table.
There's something that's happening that I've noticed recently, and I don't know if other people are noticing this too, but if you are, please write to me at radiocafe@ksfr.org, because this is a conversation I would like to be having with people. What I've noticed is that we are living in this society where we are expected to do more and more, where there's more and more work. I just saw some, I grew up on a college campus, and I saw some people that I grew up with and, you know, their parents who were now all retired. And back in the day when I was young and my father was a professor, professors had dinner parties with each other and they talked and they socialized and they thought and they shared ideas over drinks or over coffee. And now everybody's working, and everybody's working more and more. And the young professors, even at the same institutions, are working more and more. And all of us are working more and more. And it's like we're balloons that are getting stretched thinner and thinner and thinner. And at a certain point, the breaking point comes, and you have to stop and pull back and slow down and take deep breaths and stop working and look.
I couldn't agree more.
And I think this time is coming. I think a lot of people, I don't know, I'd love to hear other people's view on this, but people are just like, I can't do anymore. I've reached the limit.
Well, you know, one thing I think we frequently remind ourselves up at St. John's is that the etymology of the word scholarship is the Greek word skole, which means leisure. I think we've moved a long way from that original sense that scholarship was a form of leisure.
One of the ideas of this series is, and you know, extended series in general, is that people will get immersed. So they'll come back every Saturday or every Sunday. The shows play Saturday and Sunday at 11 and Monday at 6, so you have some chances. You come back week after week. You engage in a kind of dialogue with the films. You see the same people there. There will be people introducing the films and giving some context each week. And so at the end of 8 weeks, you've had an immersion into cinema in a way that changes the way you see, of course, cinema, but maybe also in the way that you approach your daily life. And that's what art's potential is.
On that note, it is actually time to go. Jason Silverman is a filmmaker and director of the Cinematheque at the CCA, the Center for Contemporary Arts, in Santa Fe, where all these films will be screened starting this Saturday night at 7:30. Charlie Chaplin's Gold Rush, accompanied by musician Hank Troy. David Carl is Dean of Graduate Programs at St. John's College, and the Summer Institute being behind the selection of all of these films. Thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
And for more information, you can go to ccasantafe.org or call 982-1338. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.